Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again with another series of positional previews. I want to remind everybody that these are brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce and our longtime friends For the Table Restaurant Group. Bud, this is one of the favorite things that we do every year, something that I personally look forward to, and it's as good of an indicator that the season is soon to come as anything that's on my calendar.
Ingram, happy to be doing with you again, man. We're going to talk a little bit about what's going to happen this season. We're going to actually pull some audio maybe or some quotes from last year's positional previews to see what we got right and, importantly, what we got wrong, where we can improve and make some predictions.
Let's get into it. All right, Bud, we move on to our next position preview, and this is the group that everybody loves and eagerly anticipating our look at the offensive line, I have no doubts about.
Yeah, everybody's favorite position, Ingram. This should be a good show. Promise to give it to you straight. Don't want to just go with the kind of generic offensive line is terrible take, because it, as we know, it's a position of failure. When the play goes well, the TV camera pans to the guy who caught the ball or who ran the ball, or sometimes it'll linger on the guy who threw the ball. But it doesn't linger on the guy who made a pancake block or the guy who sealed the edge or the guy who got out of his stance quickly and pulled to, you know, to make a cutoff or anything like that. And so, look, people's perceptions of the offensive line player are skewed. And as somebody who works in FSU media but also in national media, you know, I have to read various message boards and things to kind of get a feel for other teams. Every single fan base thinks their offensive line sucks. Alabama fans think their line sucks. And most of their guys get drafted on a yearly basis. So let's just keep that in mind here. But at the same time, I also don't want to say that last year's offensive line was the strength of the team, because it really wasn't. They had 9 different guys start at least 2 games due to injury or performance, mostly injury, and they didn't play all that well at times.
So when we look back at last year's offensive line and what we could make sense of around this time of year for a preview, we were pretty blown away by the depth. I mean, I'll be honest, and that's not for silly reasons. I mean, prior to having to medically disqualified Chad Mavetti, you were looking at rolling into camp with 20 scholarship offensive linemen, which is as large of a number as I can remember, certainly at this program. So you had 19 kids going into camp, and the vast majority of that depth was on the interior. It was the guard and center positions. This year we may have a little bit of a different look just when you first look at the way that the depth of this line is distributed through the positions.
Yeah, Ingram, they used that depth last year. I mean, that we talked about how that was going to be a strength of the team, and they needed, I mean, gosh, almost half of those guys had to end up playing. I mean, like we said, 9 guys starting at least 2 games. This year, I think they have 16 on scholarship. Now, they have a couple guys who are out for the year with injury, but they were not really expected to be big-time contributors this year, so this preview is going to focus on about 12 guys, which is a pretty good number. If you have 12 guys, you're fairly confident, hey, if you had to throw in there, you know, they wouldn't be terrible. They could be serviceable. I think that's solid. And you're right. I mean, last year we thought, hey, can Rod Johnson take another step? You know, he was part of a nice recruiting class and one that continues to improve. But I don't know if he took a step last year, like at least not a huge one. You know, and his draft status took a hit.
Yeah. If you were to tell me that Rod Johnson weren't on this team and he went pro, I would have thought that he would have had a much better year than he actually did last year. So a little bit of an unexpected level of play there from Johnson. He wasn't poor by any means, but never his career never really followed the trajectory that a lot of people thought it could, and those were justified hopes. I mean, that was a big physical, talented kid, obviously a national recruit that Florida State was able to land, but a guy who was here, certainly served the program well, was a good guy off the field, but he's gone, and now you're left with a lot of different pieces and some talented ones at that, but a little bit of uncertainty throughout this line, but particularly at what might man your tackle position.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you have better depth at tackle this year, but I don't think you have a necessarily better overall talent. I mean, Rod was one of the more talented guys on your roster you know, him not developing was not good. And I think kind of a ding on the coaching staff, also a ding on him. I think we got some of this right last year and some of this wrong. You know, we thought that Bavion would get some snaps and set up more of a legit battle in 2017 at center, Bavion Johnson. That really didn't happen. He had kind of a promising spring, but now Bavion is going to miss, looks like, all of 2017 with a meniscus injury, first reported by Andrew Miller of Tomahawk Nation. If you want, we can, you know, we can kind of start at center or, you know, tackle or guard. I feel like because we just talked about Bavion, we could lead into the tackles. But
sure, yeah, let's look two tackles and then we'll go move our way inside.
All right. So at tackle in the spring, it was Josh Ball and Rick Leonard, right? And I don't know if they know what they're doing at tackle, and I don't mean to imply like they don't know what they're doing, like they're mm-hmm. they're clueless. Right. I mean, imply yeah. like I don't know if they know what the plan's going to be. And as we sit here, you know, on Tuesday morning, man, I don't know if that's necessarily a good thing with Alabama looming and this first month. I'd like them to have more continuity at this point. But it does look like for the past couple practices, Derek Kelly and Rick Leonard have been playing tackle. Now, Rick Leonard is, what is he, a senior? Yeah, okay, so he's a senior. Derek Kelly is a third or fourth year junior who was injured last year and well, kind of coming off an injury. You know, I think that we kind of forgot about Derek because he was promising as a redshirt freshman. Then he kind of got hurt last year. Performance wasn't there as he came back from it. This year he's been playing better, and I think as of now, Derek Kelly's going to be a starting tackle. Whether that's a good thing, Ingram, is kind of, man, to me that's kind of still TBD, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rick Leonard is a guy, very interesting. You know, he converted from defensive end last year, played very poorly at the beginning of the season. I think had a kind of a crisis of confidence, and then adapted some, got better in practice, and came back and had a pretty decent bowl game against Michigan. And, you know, from all accounts, had a pretty decent spring. He's put on some good weight. I thought Fisher announcing that he was going to be the left tackle at his opening press conference of the fall was very curious because in spring, Fisher had said that he's more comfortable on the right side. And I was right. kind of thinking, what has this guy actually shown like in summer where they're not wearing pads and are not doing, you know, that type of drills that he can play the left side, which is slightly different, not, you know, worlds different. But now it looks like he's more back at right tackle more often in practice. So I think I'm okay with these tackles. I don't think they're going to be world beaters, but you know, can they be decent to good? I think there's a possibility of that.
Yeah, I think a lot of this overall conversation about the line is that they don't have to necessarily be world beaters, and certainly I'm not the first person to say that. But you know, can you put together five guys that are going to give you the ability to see what every other position can do, basically not be a hindrance to what the rest of this offense is trying to be and just be a solid, serviceable unit. So the shuffle that's occurred at tackle is a little curious, and it's something that we've mentioned previously. Certainly some lack of continuity as to both the players, where they line up, and the reasons and messaging surrounding where they line up. You have Leonard, you have Kelly, who would be your opening day starter per your head coach as of about a week ago. Ball is a kid that we thought would potentially be a starter. Brock Rubel remains and is a nice emergency option, but I don't know that I would want to depend on him a whole lot more than that. And Ethan Firth kind of round out your groups of tackles. So some nice pieces there, some pieces that you hope could perform well if called upon, but I don't blame any Florida State fan or anybody in the fan base that has a little bit of hesitancy or concern as to what this level of play from this group will really look like. There's not a whole lot of known quantities from what you're really going to be able to project just when you immediately look at who you have on the outside of the line.
Look, I'm almost more enamored with the depth here than I am with the frontline starters, right? I think you have guys. Ball is now a redshirt freshman, and Rubel is now Richard Jr. I think most teams would be very happy to have those guys as their third and fourth tackle, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a whole lot of teams in the nation who have better depth than that, which I think is important for this team, you know, because what if one of those starters struggles? Like you said, you know, what if what if they don't have the continuity and they play poorly early on and you have to juggle some things around? I think that's very valuable. You know, sometimes you need to sit a guy down for a couple series and just let him calm down, you know? I like the depth here at tackle, but I don't know about the top end here.
With that, let's move to guard. You got two guys that immediately jump out, Landon Dickerson, Cole Minshew. And behind those two, this would be the area line that you have a little bit of concern as to what may lie behind them and what you'd really be able to get if you had to replace one of those guys. And it's not as though let me see how I can say this. I guess I have more confidence in what I've seen out of Dickerson than Minshew from their level of play. But if those two kids are healthy, then you should have two very very college ready guards and two kids that have shown you enough that I don't think you have to be a complete homer to think that your interior play could be maybe one of the strengths of your line, particularly in the back half of the year if these kids get a little bit more experience under the road and also a schedule that is a little more friendly than the 3 of the better defensive lines that they're going to see come in the first 4 games, and that's something that we've mentioned multiple times.
Oh, all right, so save that because I want to circle back to that. But I think you nailed this with, look, if those guys stay healthy, if Minshew and Dickerson stay healthy, which they've struggled to do throughout, you know, their young career so far, they could become, you know, one of, if not the best, guard tandems in the nation. Now, maybe I'm a year early with this. Maybe I'm, you know, sitting here for the 2018 preview saying the same thing because, look, they're both sophomores. Mm-hmm. Minshew's a redshirt and Dickerson's a true sophomore. But, man, they are nasty. They're physical. You know, if Minshew can avoid the concussions and stay in shape, that's a heck of a guard tandem. You know, we need to see them work together, make fewer mental errors. But physically, those guys are nice. But behind them, you know, David Robbins, we'll see. I know he's been getting more run in practice. I think he's probably your top backup guard option at this point. If you lost a guard for a protracted period of time, you know, Derek Kelly can also play guard. So it wouldn't shock me if he shifted down and then you moved one of the tackles up to play tackle. That's part of the value in the cross-training that they try to achieve. So you have that. You also, I know that Trickett believes that if you cross-train the guys, because offensive line is a position that requires so much communication, and perhaps more than any other position, you are more likely to understand how all the assignments and positions work in concert, right? Which can help you to play the position. But Minshew is kind of your classic road grader. You know, he's just 330, 340, massive. If he gets his hands on you, he leans on you, and you're kind of done. Dickerson is more athletic. I think he's actually more mean. He's a guy who I think actually had the athleticism, maybe at some programs, to play tackle, if not the length. But I'm really excited about the guards. And we talk about run blocking with the guards a lot, but it's also a very important facet of pass protection, especially when you have a small quarterback like DeAndre, who's listed at, I don't know, what do they list him at? Like, I don't know how many fake inches are there, but it's not... He's probably 6 flat, right? Like, if we're being honest here.
I think he's officially 6'1".
But, yeah.
Yeah, he's a kid that's probably 6 feet.
If he ends up at the combine, he's probably 6'0", you know? And that matters because you got to see over your line. And, you know, if they're right up in your face, it's harder. So those guys anchoring and giving him a pocket to step up into, especially if your tackles, you know, are beat on a play, that's really key. So I like the... It's almost the reverse of the tackle spot, right? The tackle, we like the depth. Guard, we like the top end, but the worry is the depth, whereas tackle, the worry is the top end talent level there. Both of these guys, I think, are NFL players. Dickerson, without a doubt, if he stays healthy. Minshew, I'm pretty sure. I'm not entirely sure that Leonard and Kelly are. I mean, we have mm-hmm. to, that's kind of the contrast I want to outline for the people there. Look, I think that this the guard play has a chance to be better than last year's guard play. I think it almost certainly will. And in fact, look, sometimes the best indication, and players are not always the best at evaluating other players, right? they all thought Kelvin Benjamin in 2012 was a beast, but as we know, there was stuff going on there, and he really hadn't picked up the offense at all. Now, Wilson Bell, a senior, transferred out to Auburn. Why? Well, some people will tell you it's because, you know, hey, sometimes offensive linemen fall out of love with Trickett and the offensive line coach, and I can certainly see that. He's really hard on his guys, and you know, if you get in your mind that he is a favorite and that favorite's not you, then you may want out of there, and that could be. It also could be that he saw that two younger guys in Dickerson and Minshew are more talented than him, and we're going to take his spots, and thus he went looking for a place to play, and he's going to start at Auburn. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Just for some perspective, this offensive line, Ingram, that sucks, according to, I would say, about 95% of the commenters on Facebook, the message boards, you know, the comment section. They got a backup going to play for what is probably the second or third best SEC team and starting on that team.
The Wilson Bell situation is a little bit of a mystery to me and a source of frustration. I never thought that kid was like a fantastic player, but damn if he wouldn't make me feel better about where we sit today if he was part of the conversation at guard. But
oh, absolutely.
Obviously, that is not the case. He's left, as you rightfully pointed out. He very much appears to be a day one starter for Auburn, so we can figure, you know, we can try to figure out what went through his head there and wish the kid the best of luck. Yeah, I don't have any problem thinking that Dickerson and Minshew may be a physical upgrade to Bell. It's just, an issue of consistency, of ability to be able to go. And like you said, if those two kids stay healthy, then you really feel confident about the product that you're putting at your left and right guard position. So with that, Bud, let's move to if this is everybody's favorite positional preview in particular – then this small segment of it is probably everybody's favorite subsegment of subsection of that positional preview, and that is let's jump into the center position.
Yeah, which struggled last year and was not that good, and oftentimes was pushed back into the Andre. And this offseason we found out partially why. Now only partially why, because look, it's still not a good look for Florida State to have only one real option there at the position. And that option was Alec Eberle. And we learned that Alec Eberle had double hip labrum surgery this offseason, like both of them. And there's a really good article in Sports Illustrated by, I think, Andy Staples, where Eberle describes that he was, you know, lying there in bed and the pain meds had worn off. And he just had to tell himself repeatedly, I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die, which is pretty crazy. Jimbo Fisher also had a booster event that I was at, said that Eberle had like an inch plus of bone removed from each hip to improve his flexibility and reduce his pain. That's nuts. Like I mean, that seems like pretty serious surgery. I've had a labrum mm-hmm. surgery on my shoulder, not my hip. But man, that's tricky. According to Eberle, he's feeling better. He's a lot more flexible. I will tell you that he is noticeably bigger in the upper body. Like, if you see him in person year over year, you will notice a difference. Now, lower body, I don't know. I do question how much he was able to work out, you know, and squat and all that kind of stuff, recovering from that. But, you know, I haven't heard that he looks skinnier in the lower body or anything. So maybe there's a chance he's at least holding serve there and getting stronger in the upper body with his punch. Now, I had a source tell me that he's actually still in pain, but I don't know how much I trust that. Well, I guess we'll have to see. I guess linemen are always in pain to some extent.
Yeah. But I was going to say, I don't mean to be callous, but is he in pain and can perform at a better level? And again, I'm not trying to diminish what the kid's personally going through, but that's a little bit more of a concern for me. Does all this, you know, shaving of bone and what we heard, does that lead to a better player? We won't know. It may allow you to have a little bit of optimism, and it may allow you to be a little more generous in writing off some of the performance failures of 2016. But does it lead to a better player? That'll be one of the larger questions surrounding this position group.
I totally agree. And I think FSU fans have to hope that it does, because now Bavion's out for the year. And I was told Bavion was not playing well in practice, and I think that maybe we found out why, because he had a torn knee. You know, I think he'll be better, but I don't know that he'll be better. I think, you know, being bigger, another year in the system, I think will help him, right? Now, he's a real rah-rah guy and is someone who I think wants to act like a leader of the offense. And I know he stood up in front of the team and talked about accountability and that kind of stuff. And I forgot where that might have been in Sports Illustrated too. But guys will only follow you if you can play, right?
Yeah, man.
If
that you scares suck, me. That does scare me because he may suck. And you can't talk like that if you're not one of your better players.
And your quarterback's not really a leader, not a vocal leader, right? And I don't know. I mean, like, are you going to have a tight end like Izzo lead the offense? You know, we talked about in receiver preview. You're going to have a receiver who they have to yell at to give effort lead the offense. Eberle wants to be the vocal guy, but you got to have a certain level of play to do that. And last year, he was not good enough to be hollering. All right, just period. He wasn't. They see him getting beat out there. Now, sometimes it was on the young guards. I think that they deserved more criticism than they got for some of their mental mistakes. But still, like, he's not going to be an elite player. Physically, I think he can be a good player, but I don't think he can be like a freak. Your backup right now is either Baselli or Martinez. I know they both be getting second string reps in practice because Johnson's out. I do think that the drop-off there is fairly decent, by the way. So you need Eberle to play well, and we'll see if he can. I mean, he's got to be a heady guy and a guy who, you know, leads the offense by knowing the calls, making the checks, that type of stuff, reducing the mental errors, reducing kind of the plays that are screwed up from the word go, because he's not a guy who's going to physically overwhelm opponents.
Complete agreement there. I mean, we'll have to see what we get out of this group. I think there's some cause for concern, and at the same time, there's some cause for optimism, but if there's any group, particularly on this side of the ball, that when we talk about that you just have, it could go wrong. You know, this could go south. I mean, undoubtedly, you could have a position. You could have an injury at guard and an injury at tackle, and all of a sudden, you're forced to put some pieces out there that have you concerned, and maybe as a byproduct of those injuries, you're further forced to move some of these guys around. So, You can see a path where this works out. You can see a path where, by the end of the year, Florida State has a pretty serviceable line. But this, if any particular group, this is certainly the one that probably causes the most collective angst among the fan base moving into 2017.
Yeah, look, I think that receiver and quarterback have a greater potential for disaster because of the depth issues, right? Like, this, your offensive line has better depth in those spots. If you lose a receiver or two, you're screwed. If you lose DeAndre, you're screwed. If you lose a couple of these guys, you have decent, more, you know, older depth to where the drop-off is not quite as hard. But I also, you know, we don't know if they have quite the potential to be excellent like the receivers potentially do, or like DeAndre potentially, in theory, does.
I'm not belittling your point at all. The quarterback one I take out for the most part, because you can say that for most teams. It's rare that you say if you lose your quarterback here, you're not screwed. Now, occasionally you've recruited to a point where that's not the case. But we talked all, the podcast that was published this morning, we talked all about the depth at wide receiver and how good your first three could be and the drop that falls off. But just here in particular, it's concerning. If you lose a guard, I think you're in trouble. If you have concentrated injuries anywhere, and that's a statement that you can apply to any position on the football field, you're in trouble. But there's just some pieces here that if they get forced into action too quickly, you're going to be in trouble in general, and you could have the potential to get embarrassed. It's also probably worth talking, Bud, and you mentioned this earlier, that we, in this position preview, with a little bit of perspective, or at least asking people for perspective, this unit may look like trash against Alabama, flat out. They may look like that. Hopefully they won't.
Most do.
But
I mean, Clemson won the national title, and their offensive line looked like trash against Alabama for the first 45 minutes of that game.
Right. So
they got their ass beat.
If we sit here on September 3rd and September 4th and have a comprehensive look back at the Alabama game and talk about the woes of the offensive line, It doesn't mean that this unit's going to be absolute garbage all year, but it does mean that you've got some question marks going into this group, and you're playing the team, and in particular, you're playing the team that consistently has a unit along the other line of scrimmage that consistently embarrasses people, beats them up, and is a humbling experience for just about anybody. So this unit may be a work in progress. It may be something that we continue to evaluate through the course of the year, and it may be by the end of the year that this unit's turned into a little bit of a strength as opposed to the liability that I think they may be. But going to have a little bit of patience and a little bit of perspective when judging this group from the beginning of the year.
And look, I think that it's going to be September, right? I mean, like the focus on the Alabama game is warranted because it's the first game, because it's the marquee name, because they have the most talent. But mm-hmm. I mean,
doesn't get a whole lot better or a whole lot easier.
Bradley Chubb, in your next Justin three. Jones, B.J. Hill, Kentavious Street, Darian Roseborough. You know, I mean, those guys are NFL dudes. R.J. McIntosh, mm-hmm. Kendrick Norton, Chad Thomas, Joe Jackson, you know, Trent Harris. At Miami, and then, you know, at Bama, Daron Payne, Deshaun Hand, Josh Frazier, Raekwon Davis, who I mean he's a freak. You know, Johnny Dwight, Sean Down Hamilton, Rashawn Evans, Mac Wilson. Those defensive lines are going to make everybody they face look pretty bad all year. That's Miami, NC State, Alabama. All right. Florida State is playing more defensive line talent in the first month of the season than most teams in college football will face all year.
Period.
That's going to set up a recipe to look bad. Like, I mean, that's it. Like, they're going to look bad because everybody looks bad against that level of defensive line talent in college football. Defensive lines are almost always ahead of offensive lines. So you're going to have to grade this on a curve. I know we will. I don't know if others will. Probably not. You know, but it's going to be very tough. And, you know, I think we're going to look at this and we're going to say, okay, you know, how bad did they struggle? Did they struggle more than other lines have struggled against us and more than other good lines have struggled against these teams? I don't know. You know, they actually blocked NC State okay last year, which I thought was a pretty big accomplishment. NC State is loaded on the defensive line. You know, DeAndre got hit a lot against Miami. Some of it was dirty by Miami and not flagged, but, you know, they also held up at times. We'll see what happens here. I anticipate that people are going to think the offensive line is just absolute trash throughout the first month of the year because they are not going to appreciate the quality of defensive line competition that FSU is facing.
I'll tell you what, the one thing that I would ask you, if we're going to sit here and have perspective, and look, you don't want penetration anywhere along the line, but they have to get the issues on the inside cleared up. Way too frequently, people were just beating instantaneous, just free shots on the quarterback from like your A gap.
Yeah, the communication issues.
Just straight, you know, the shortest point of attack, and the interior issues and some of those assignments have got to be cleared up, and that's going to be the first thing. If you're working through some growing pains and you're bringing some young kids that it's worth remembering. Rick Trickett called this group of kids that are now sophomores the best offensive line class he's ever signed. If you're starting to really bring those kids into the forefront, then there'll be a learning curve. There'll be a curve as far as the level of play that you get, but way too frequently, you know, A gap, B gap, assignments blown, and guys, there's nothing in football that kills a play quicker than interior penetration. And when you're not even getting a hand on a guy, whether it be a linebacker blitz or a defensive tackle assignment blown, then that's got to get cleared up, and that's got to be something that's this unit as a whole is better at doing.
100%. And look, knowing your assignment and getting the call right is not dependent on the guy across from you being talented or not talented, right? That's a mental thing. They need to clean that up a lot. I think it's a great point by you, man. Like if they lose on a play, I want that to be because they're just physically beat by somebody mm-hmm. better, right? Which is going to happen a lot in September. Now, I don't want it to be because they made a lot of mental errors, which happened too often last year. You're exactly right. And that's on coaching. If that's not better, they may need to look to make a change there. You know? I think that's very possible. We also got to see how well they get them right. The other thing I want to talk about in this preview, and I know we're running long again, but with this, I feel like people are very much of the mindset that Florida State is better at run blocking than pass blocking, and they are. But I don't know if it's quite to the extent that maybe some media outlets presented by. And let me ask you this. Who were they run blocking for last year?
I think I know where you're going with this, and this is a great thing to consider. Who are they run blocking for? Who's going to maybe make you look a little bit better than you are? And maybe more importantly, who are they pass blocking for? And who maybe makes you a little bit worse than you actually were? Whether it be holding on to the ball too long or just pocket awareness and ability to step into a pocket when frequently they were there. I think I know what you're saying, and judging this group based off the players that kind of were reflective of their performance is a good thing to keep in the back of your mind.
Absolutely. So remember the stat we read off in the quarterback preview from our friend Bill Connolly, right? On third and four or more, Francois had a passer rating of 156, 10 touchdowns, no interceptions, 5 scrambles for first downs. That's awesome. But what that doesn't say is how many sacks he took and how long he had to hold the ball to get those good surface numbers. He held the ball forever and a day because he's a tough guy, wants to stand in there and make the play, and that's an admirable quality. The other part was that he was kind of slow to read defenses at times, which is something he needs to improve on. That absolutely made the offensive line look worse. With Cook, I felt like this was a mistake that Jimbo Fisher made for part of last year, and he actually did break this tendency against Michigan in a very, very positive way. They almost never ran the ball on passing downs, 105th nationally, only 27% of the time. So defenses really knew when they got to third and four or more that they were chucking it, which I thought was kind of a mistake because I want defenses to respect Dalvin at all times, And Michigan somewhat didn't on that long run that they broke on that draw play that broke big. FSU was throwing on passing downs. FSU opponents knew it, and DeAndre held the ball for a long time. That will make your offensive line look worse on passing downs. I would like to protect them more and let them run the ball more on those passing downs this year. One thing I forgot to add, I was going to put in the notes this morning. Francois has got to get better against blitz, right? And for people who don't know this, in blitz, if there's a man unaccounted for by numbers, right? Like, let's say I only have 5 blockers, right? And the defense is bringing 6. Well, we can't ask 5 blockers to block 6 guys. So the unaccounted guy is the responsibility of the quarterback. He has to see him, identify him, and get the ball out to the guy who is going to be open, because by math, you should have somebody open if you're bringing 6 guys. It only leaves 5 guys in coverage, so you're either straight man across the board, which is oftentimes easy pickings, or it's some kind of zone deal where you have a void in the defense where the receiver's going to sit down. He has got to get better against blitz. He was not good at that last year. I assume that teams will see that on film and continue to blitz him a lot. Hopefully FSU's receivers can make them pay if he does by taking some deep shots and whatnot if FSU picks it up. But that's another thing, too. When you watch it, hey, somebody should have been blocking him is a common refrain. Not really.
Not always.
Not always. Sometimes if it comes off the edge, that's on the quarterback. One of those shots he took against Miami, I believe, was one that he wore it, and it was his mistake. it was his own fault.
Well, I would hope as a Florida State fan that he would be able to find the guy that's open. Maybe my more realistic hope would be that he would just get it to Keith Gavin or Alden Tate. I mean, if you're looking at one-on-one, then try that. And maybe you find the guy, maybe by the midpoint of the year you're at a place where as a quarterback you're better at being able to not only tell when a team's blitzing, but where it's coming from and being able to find, the vulnerability that blitz has created. But in the meantime, you've got two guys that you need to start getting the ball out to as security blankets, and that's what they're there for. So let's utilize those large physical wide receivers, and if either of those two guys are covered, there's an element to them that may still allow them to be open, if you know what I'm saying.
I absolutely do, and that's the blitz thing by the QB is just something I'm very concerned about due to just things I've been hearing from camp so far. So let's hope that gets cleaned up. Let's hope the offensive line takes a step forward this year and does not have a repeat of last year, especially because They're facing more talented defenses this year, so they're going to have to step up to avoid a step back.
I think that's a good look at what this unit potentially could be, Bud. I mean, there's some areas that you got to feel confident about. There's some areas that you have concern. But on the whole, this, you know, you've had the pieces here. You've certainly recruited in a manner that this should be a serviceable offensive line and an offensive line that by the end of the year maybe turns into a mild strength. We'll see. But I think this is a good little look at the offensive line. Want to thank our friends at Louisiana Hot Sauce and For the Table Restaurant Group who make these position previews possible. That will conclude our look at the offensive side of the ball, and we will return next, switching our focus to the defense, and I believe the defensive line in particular.
All right, man. We'll talk to you on the flip.